This is Truth Quest, and are you there, Eric?
I am.
Okay. All right. I'll turn you, get you turned up a little bit. And that was Poker Face, and with several songs, but one of them was Revolution. And I wanted to thank Brad with a great chicken salad program right before, and being Truth Quest with Melody. I usually have a co-host, Dr. Eric Carlstrom, but tonight I'm going to be here on my own with Eric Schein. And this is KHEN 106.9 Salida. It's streamed on the internet, and the web address Googled is KHEN.org. And I wanted to say the opinions expressed by the hosts and guests on this show do not necessarily represent the views of KHEN, its staff, or board of directors. And Lieutenant Schein is a graduate of the United States Merchant Marine Academy at Kings Point as an expert in the history of the United States Merchant Marine, as well as issues relating to shipping issues and national security. In his role as a whistleblower, Lieutenant Schein has taken his United States Merchant Marine oath, Octo Non Verba, or Deeds Not Words, to new heights. Lieutenant Schein has been the subject on hundreds of articles and has appeared in numerous television and radio programs nationwide, including shows on Air America, Voice of America, and Pacifica Radio. Eric, thank you for coming on the program.
Thank you, Melody. Acto Non Verba. Deeds Not Words.
Oh, okay.
No worries. I saw it spelled I don't know how many different times as I went in and out the gates of the academy, so I'm very familiar with the phrase. And it goes literally to, you know, what's going on in our nation across the spectrum, that it's literally about deeds, not words. You know, there's plenty of good intentions out there. The old adage of the world is full of good intentions, but it's those rare few, a small percent, you know, we can either let a rogue element take over our government and run it as a fascist empire, 1 to 3% of the population, just like in the former Soviet Union, it was, you know, 1 to 3, sometimes up to 5% that were active members of the Politburo. Same thing in Nazi Germany, members of the National, you know, Socialist Party, very small fraction. But it also takes a very small percentage to change things and to seize power and put it back into the hands of the people where it rightly belongs.
Okay, what is the reason that, why is it that you're appearing on this program as far as what is going on with you in your life that has made you become a part of the Patriot Movement?
I went to private parochial schools, you know, Roman Catholic. I'm part Irish, part Portuguese. Eagle Scout class president, ASB honor roll. Eventually went, you know, afforded a very good education for my parents, my family. Eventually went to public schools in the form of the United States Merchant Marine Academy, which is sister academy to West Point Annapolis, which is also an excellent education, several hundred thousand, anywhere from $200,000 to $320,000 education, depending on who's counting and how they're counting per student. And that all comes from U.S. taxpayers. It's one of the five federal service academies. It's a sister academy to West Point and Annapolis. It's a sister academy also to the Coast Guard Air Force academies. And then there's a bunch of state academies, too, not just for maritime, but then you also have, like, DMI and the Citadel. These are some premier institutions. My own academy is ranked higher than Harvard and MIT as having graduates of CEOs, presidents of the boards, chairman of the board, et cetera, of corporations, and even in public service. The admiral of the Fifth Fleet in the Gulf right now is a Kings Pointer. One of the more infamous Kings Pointers is Andrew Card, who was a huge GM lobbyist. He was Secretary of Transportation under the first President Bush and also Chief of Staff to this President Bush for a while. So Kings Point is a very fine institution with some very fine graduates, and not only did I have some excellent classmates, but some stellar individuals graduated well before me and also since. And the academy itself has been under attack, but in 1943, when the academy was christened, instituted under the Merchantmen Act of 1936, that reinvigorated the simple fact that the United States Merchant Marine is a valid federal and even military or naval branch of service. I come out of there with a naval commission and more. Roosevelt said that Kings Point would serve the United States Merchant Marine as West Point serves the military and as Annapolis serves the Navy. And what's happened is it's been under an attack. Not only have they been working to try to privatize it, but our entire fleet, our federal fleet, which goes to an international right-of-way on the water for the United States and the American people, is and has been under attack for quite some time, you know, ever since probably World War II. We had over 10,000 ships. Now we're down to a couple hundred. Our shipyards are being taken over and sold off to foreign interests. Philly Shipyard is now Kvarner, which is a foreign, you know, corporation. Many of these shipping companies, San Francisco Dry Dock, NASCO, which is National Steel and Shipbuilding Company, was bought up by General Dynamics, which was bought up by Carlisle. And a lot of these corporations, especially our holding groups like Carlisle, are and have been buying up military industrial complex assets throughout the military industrial industry to vertically integrate them, add value to them through wars and rumors of war. And they've really expanded this program, and they're using admiralty and general maritime law, which is constitutional, even under one of the examples of one of the things that I like to bring out to people and kind of point out is President Bush has placed Admiral Fallon in charge of the ground forces in Iraq. It's not General Petraeus who is in charge, it's Admiral Fallon. And the reason for this is that they are trying to, or he has done an end run around the Constitution, to seize the ground forces, the military, and make them part of the Navy. And there's a reason for that, because under the Constitution, Article 1, Congress has the purse strings and the control of the military, because we're not supposed to have a standing military. We're supposed to raise one in case of a foreign invasion. But the president, under Article 2, has authority over the Navy, and that is to repel an invasion in case there's a foreign fleet coming our way. And the reason for that is the president's always on duty. Congress may be, you know, not in session. They may be home. They may be in their states or local areas and not in D.C. And this gives the president the ability as the watchdog to protect the country, you know, in the twilight hours, to get Congress back in place. And what's happened, though, is that he's done this end run around it so that if Congress starts to get a wake-up call and says, hey, we're going to rein in the strings here and we're going to take control of the military, the president's going to say, well, guess what? You don't control the military. I do. It's now been, you know, commandeered under my authority under the Constitution to command and control the naval forces.
Do you think the Congress is aware of that, then?
No. And that's why I've been trying to make this clip. If you start to read, and because this can come from the people, and there's even people reading a lot of the rules for the Congress and the Senate on how they're supposed to function and things that they can and cannot do. You know, this gets into, like, the nuclear option and the filibuster and a bunch of other rules. Average citizens have started to pick up some of these books and read them and understand them better than our, you know, representatives. And at some point, you know, you can't place all the blame on our representatives, on our leaders, because we are the watchdogs over the government. The people are the watchdogs over the government. And the only way that the government will represent us is for us to give them the information and the tools that they need to do their job and to understand what their job is and to understand how they can effectively carry that out, whether it's to rein in this, you know, administration run amok. And that's an understatement in what's gone on. You know, President Bush has brought in a battalion into D.C. to protect it for the next year. There's Article 51, which is basically given the military powers, and there's a difference between martial rule and military rule that needs to be pointed out. is martial law is temporary. It's for a couple days, a couple weeks. It allows the police forces, the firemen, the courts to get back in session. It's, you know, Katrina has hit. We're recovering from it. It takes a few days. You could have the National Guard in, troops. They're not supposed to be carrying M16s, maybe sidearms to shoot a rabid dog or something. And I mean literally a rabid dog and not a rabid human. And they're supposed to just help things get back to order. And that's temporary. What is going on now, though, is a big difference. It's military rule. Even now, the U.S. Coast Guard, which has been seized under admiralty, the Coast Guard is now declaring itself to be a branch of the military. This is on its own website, and you can go research this yourself and your listeners, hopefully, and they'll, you know, read this and understand this. The Coast Guard has never been a branch of military. It is has been under the Department of Transportation for a reason. It's been a civil service, and just because you have guns and boats doesn't mean that you're a branch of the military. Sorry?
I didn't say anything, but is the Coast Guard the Merchant Marine, or is there a difference here?
There are two distinct, separate branches of service. I have a Coast Guard license, and they've granted the licensing authority to the Coast Guard. They're invited on our academy grounds to administer the test, and that's just basically for professional, so that you don't have the same people in the same industry and have a lot of favoritism and nepotism. It goes to separation of powers. And so for the professional engineering or licensing exams for even, like, say, a captain or a mate, that authority has been granted over to the Coast Guard. But they're not supposed to get into any personnel matters because it's a separate and distinct branch of service. I have a naval commission. I've been granted a naval commission for a reason. I'm a step above the Coast Guard. The Coast Guard, though, and even the Merchant Marine under war time, becomes a naval auxiliary. And what's happened, though, is, A, there's been no declaration of war, because we're going into Iraq to help it, right? We weren't going in there to, you know...
invade.
Right, exactly, because it wasn't anything that Iraq did. It was 15 of the 19 terrorists were from Saudi Arabia. We went in to supposedly depose Saddam Hussein because he was a really bad guy, or because he tried to kill somebody's daddy, or because he had WMDs, or whatever other reason they could, you know, spin it into. I think there's been probably, you know, if you start counting 10, 15, 20 different reasons, it's changed with time, of going in there. But at some point, there was no, quote-unquote, declaration of war by Congress, period. And, you know, this is as much a police action as Vietnam was, if not less or more so. And in a time of war, when there is a declared war, the United States Merchant Marine is transferred into the Navy, and the Coast Guard is, you know, would be converted into something like they're saying that it is now, which would be a branch of military, or, you know, eventually it would come under the Navy. But what they've done is the Coast Guard is in the Department of Homeland Security. And with this new creation under the Patriot Act and Homeland Security Act, they've created this new department that is literally a new Department of Defense to, you know, for the homeland or fatherland. And now the Department of Defense, just like in World War II, has now become the Department of Offense. So we now have a Department of Defense and a Department of Offense.
So with the
and,
person,
you know, even under the Nuremberg trials and more, wars of aggression have been outlawed.
So who reports to who then?
Well, the Commandant now reports, rather than being in the Department of Defense and reporting to the Joint Chiefs of Staff and sitting on the Joint Chiefs, and then the chair of the Joint Chiefs, you know, reporting to the Secretary of the Department of Defense, he reports directly to the President. The Commandant of the U.S. Coast Guard reports directly to the President. It gets better. Well, listen to this. You'll love this. They've now come out with, they're trying to federalize everything on the water. They're trying to internationalize everything and then privatize everything. They've got two brand new vessels coming out. It's an international interceptor class for the Coast Guard. And the first two vessels in that class are named the Berthof and the Vosch. Two good German names. And I'm sorry if there are two good Polish names or two good Irish names, or two good Italian names, I would be going, that's kind of weird. But when we fought a world war or two that involved Germany, and then all of a sudden we're naming the first two vessels coming out in this international class interceptor after one German, Bertholdt, who was in the early 1900s not only the first U.S. Coast Guard commandant in the 1940s, he was also knighted by the King of England. And then you start to couple that, and you can talk about the British invasion of the Beatles and everybody else in the 60s and 70s, but Ronald Reagan was knighted by the Queen. So was George Herbert Walker Bush. So was Henry Kissinger. So was Alan Greenspan. So was Colin Powell. So was Rudy Giuliani, a future possible president or candidate. And if you look to what our founding fathers said about this, they forbade this because they were so adamant against self-appointed royal families. And they said that no federal or state government could issue titles of nobility, and in fact no citizen could receive titles of nobility.
Was that in any amendment?
Sorry?
Was that in the Constitution or any amendment?
Yeah, it's in the Constitution.
Okay.
They actually tried to pass also a Titles of Nobility Act that was allegedly the 14th Amendment before it became the anti-slavery legislation. And it's called the TONA, Titles of Nobility Act. And what it was to make it even more clear that, no, we do not have, because even some private associations tried to do this and they fought it. And this is, it's actually in a really good book called The Constitution, An American Biography. And it gets into some of the stuff like even Howard Zinn does, but maybe not as some of the stuff is, I hate to say, a little bit misconstrued, but most of it's actually pretty accurate. There are some things you have to kind of keep your, you know, eyes and ears open and make sure you don't get tripped up, because he does talk about the unitary executive and some of these other things. But it's called America's Constitution, A Biography, and it's by Akhil Reed Amar, and I'll spell that for you. It's A-K-H-I-L-R-E-E-D, and then A-M-A-R. And he's, I think he's a Yale grad. It's got a graduate, Yale College and Yale Law School, and he's a professor. But if you get into that, it gets into a lot of these different topics, like even the difference between Article 1, Article 2, and the grants of authority to the military, to Congress, and the Navy, to the President. All of this goes to the separation of powers, which also goes to another issue that's called separation of duties, which is effectively the same thing, but it gets a little bit more specific when you have in an agency, like in the executive branch, they're given administrative powers, quasi-judicial powers to adjudicate certain matters, like under the Administrative Procedure Act. And in these, what I was getting to before about the Coast Guard, too, was that they, and this goes to the quasi-judicial powers and more, but the Coast Guard is now a branch of military, right? And they're declaring this openly on their own website. In there, they get into that they are the only agency, federal agency, branch of military service, whatever, that is allowed to or has the right to not only be a branch of military, but to adjudicate civilian affairs. And there's Supreme Court case law that goes all the way to the top, that and our own Constitution, of course, that forbids the military from getting into, and we had Posse Comitatus and all sorts of other laws, even the, you know, Third Amendment. Because if you think about it, the Coast Guard being a branch of the military now is a violation, a direct violation of the Third Amendment.
Okay,
because
so then,
now they're housing amongst us federal troops, and they're disguising them, even though they're saying that they're Coast Guard and they're civil service. They're behind the scenes or now openly declaring that it's a branch of the military. But the Coast Guard is now carrying on, and has been for some time, military tribunals of American citizens, civilians.
So they've just blended it.
They've
just blended everything together. So I don't know how you guys even realize the difference between who you report to and who what you come
because
under.
We're trained in this, and anyone who knows what they're doing and how things are supposed to be, they're attacking. They don't want any institutional knowledge. They don't want anyone with the training, experience, the ability to speak up, the willingness to speak up, to survive. They're literally carrying on a purge throughout not only state but even federal service of anyone and everyone who will not keep their mouth shut and put their head down. You know, we've been trained at this, you know, even in the 50s and 60s with the nuclear era and carpe diem, seize the day because you're, you know, we all be maybe melted tomorrow by a nuclear holocaust. They taught us all to duck and cover. You know, duck and cover, duck and cover. Oh, things are getting really bad. Oh, it looks like duck and cover, duck and cover. You know, crawl under your desk. Well, at some point, that's not the, those aren't the kind of Americans that I know, and that's not the America that I know, that we're not, you know, even with experiments like Stanley Milgram looking at Americans and comparing us to quote-unquote good Germans, I think Americans are a different breed to some extent, and that, you know, we did have and do have a Declaration of Independence for a reason. We did have a Bill of Rights and also a Constitution for a reason. We are the melting pot. We are the combination of all civilizations, all societies, all religions, all ways of life, all ways of thinking, and at some point this is the melting pot to create that alloy, that special metal in the form of American citizens and American, you know, federal officers and more, to put a stop to forever what is going on that has continued on for thousands of years, which is the creation of enormous public trust and the destruction of enormous public trust and the thievery or theft of enormous public trust in the creation of civilizations and or republics and the destruction of republics. And if you look at the USSR, that is or was a republic. It was the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. And sure, we wouldn't think of it as a republic as we would like to think of republics, but it still was a republic. And when the wall came down, so did that republic. And they sold. I was over there in former Soviet Union, Soviet Union state of Georgia, and I saw what was going on. And they were taking all treasury assets, all assets, both public and private, and they were selling them as if it was a white elephant sale. And you can already see this going on here in the United States. That is privatization. And privatization is not what everybody thinks it is. It's basically the selling off of all the assets of the republic so that they can start it over again. And now this new name is being floated out, the North American Union, which is supposed to be the amalgamation or homogenization of the former nation state of Canada, the former nation state of the United States of America, and the former nation state of Mexico into this new super state known as or soon to be known as the North American Union.
So then it sounds to me like that you've kind of been blended into being a policing organization. Is that for the
say
world? I mean, it sounds like you're kind of being blended into a policing organization for the world, or am I following you correctly?
Well, do you mean in the Merchant Marine or the Coast Guard?
Yeah. Well,
the Merchant Marine's different. They're trying to dissolve it and literally to where it's all private, just like Blackwater, to where our entire federal fleet, 95% of all cargo goes by the ocean, period. Very, very little goes by air. And 97% of all that goes by foreign flag now. And under the law, the Jones Act and the Merchant Marine Act of 1936 and a bunch of other laws, the majority of our cargo, and anyone would see a majority as 51% or more, a normal majority, to be 51%, but in issues of civil defense or national security, that majority should be much higher, closer to, like, say, 75% that we require for an amendment to the Constitution or for a, override of a veto or anything else. A three-quarter majority would be more in order. And instead, we have less than 3% of all of our cargo going by American flag bottoms, meaning American flag registered here, fees paid here, taxes and everything going here into the United States, a corporation owned and formed here, and a U.S.-built ship here in an American yard, which goes towards civil defense and national security, having shipyards here in the United States that we can build ships in and having those jobs here, and then even taking the technology, whether it's plasma cutters, water jet cutters, all types of other, you know, cutters for steel, ways to weld and mend steel or bend steel, ship fitting and things that they do in a shipyard, and even taking that type of technology and training and taking it out into space or even applying it into other industries. That is technology. Those are resources. That is even, to some extent, intellectual property. That is our right. Those are things that we've all fought for and built here in the United States. They're not some asset of a corporation. That's why we have, you know, intellectual property rights, and they were structured in a certain way. That's why we have antitrust laws. That's why we have, you know, corporations register here in the United States. But the not only the government, but these corporations have become rogue agents for these self-appointed royal families who believe that the rest of mankind should be their footstools. And it's gotten to the point where we're seeing history repeating itself, as it always has, and even much of what we're, you know, encountering is biblical in nature, because I believe, to a large extent, that the Bible itself is a metaphor or an allegory. It's a tale, and it's not supposed to be taken literal. It's to tell us of how they build up republics and tear them down. And it's a warning, like the beast. The beast is the government. They take the government that's supposed to be there, just like the walls to a castle that's there for protecting people and repelling an invasion, and they turn it into a prison. And that's literally how all these systems have been turned in against us, to where now the Coast Guard, which is supposed to be a civil service to protect our coasts, is now being turned into an international agency. It's carrying on litigation all around the world. It's building international interceptor-class frigates, for want of a better word for them. It's loading in-close weapon systems, Phalanx Gatling guns, SeaWiz and Phalanx, the single and double barrel Gatling guns that fire 3,500 rounds per minute of depleted uranium, onto these vessels as if they are warships. You know, they're naming the very first two vessels out, called the Berthold and the Vosch. They're carrying on military tribunals of civilians. And all you have to do is look back through history and say, who else has done that to Americans? Well, the English sure did a good job of it on many occasions. That's how they used to treat our people and our citizens and our soldiers and sailors. And you looked at some of the things like I brought up about Reagan and Bush and all these other people being knighted by the Queen, and you start to get a really good picture of what's going on, that we have been invaded.
I've heard they are actually related, too.
Exactly. Right. Well, and that we've been recolonized. That's why it feels like it did back in those colonial days. We're working, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 jobs, trying to figure out how to survive. Our industries are being outsourced. You know, we used to have gunboats and a fleet to keep the people from running into our country, and have custom houses and everything, and then, you know, have tariffs and more. And instead, all those protections that were to protect our country, and they call that isolationism, it's not, or protectionism, it's not. It's about putting Americans first and our way of life and our rule of law under the Declaration of Independence, most importantly, and then the Constitution and Bill of Rights and rule of law in opposition to the rule of men. And now somehow all of this has been perverted and corrupted, and we're living in a feudal state that is about the, you know, golden rule, that he who has the gold makes the rules, and that goes back to a feudal system of kings, queens, and guillotines.
Where's the UN come in on this?
Well, that's just another international player. Anything that you're as global, it's probably a bad idea, except for, you know, when they talk about even global warming, you have to really stop. And when you start seeing all these players and corporations and people like Al Gore and others, you know, talking about things like this, you got to really step back and go, you know, I believe to a little, you know, even scientifically, I believe that we do add to the, you know, by taking hydrocarbon fuels and releasing the energy that is like old sun or old solar energy, for want of a better way to, you know, paraphrase it, it's taken, you know, carbon-based products and turned them into this fuel product by adding solar energy to them, literally cooking them over time and adding energy to them. And what we do by releasing it, you know, chemically through, you know, combination of oxygen, whatever, internal combustion engine, is we release that energy that's been trapped and stored. And so what we're doing is we're taking a bunch of old solar energy that has beat down on the planet over thousands, tens of thousands, if not millennia, you know, millions of years, and we're figuring out all these neat, cool ways to release that inside of internal combustion engines and other ways. And we are adding more energy into the equation than we should be or need to be, and that at some point we should be limiting all these things. But the corporations have seized upon this as a weapon, for want of a better way of describing it, to where now it's about fear and terror. And it's just another way, just like the millennium bug, just like the war in Iraq, just like terrorism, the war on terror, it's a way to, I mean, you know, look at Bush's first comments. It's like, you know, hey, things are really bad and, you know, be afraid, but hey, go shopping. It's like, what?
Okay, so how does this all tie into how you, what you're dealing with as far as the court system?
Well, because of the dissolution of the Merchant Marine and the movement of this valid federal and naval service, under, you know, we are federal officers. We are, you know, coming from Kings Point, even the state maritime academies, we are naval officers as well. They're replacing us with foreigners. And at some point you start to go, that's weird. That's not cool. Because at some point they're talking about port security. They're talking about weapons of mass destruction. They're talking about Typhoid Mary. All these things that could happen and might happen. We should be making sure that we have American flag vessels in the majority of our ports. We have American flag vessels with Americans on board applying our international rights of way and protecting those international rights of way. Because right now, if China wanted to, it really could do some harm to the United States. It's got, I mean, even President Bush wants to turn over container cargo security to Hutchinson Whampoa, which is a Chinese corporation owned and controlled by the second in command of the People's Liberation Army, which is a radical right-wing military arm of the Chinese government. And it's like, hello, he's not doing all this stuff to help us out. It's not even good business sense. It's not even economically justifiable. There's no good reason for doing any of this except for treason.
What would be the purpose of the treason, though?
Money. A good example, and I'll, this is just one of many, DOD owns 66 million acres worldwide. If there is no more United States in name, and there's a bankruptcy carried on of the United States and it becomes a North American Union, all of the assets are up for grabs. Well, how much do you think 66 million acres is worth on the world market? It's a lot of money. And this is prime. It's not just the real estate. It's the gold. It's the oil. It's the uranium, plutonium, and other materials or resources, even water, lumber, timber, and more that are on these acres. That is worth a lot of money. And if there is no more United States, then those 66 million acres are passed to, and the trustees for them and the title and where they're at is passed from those who turn out the lights to the Republic and passed to them and their friends.
Well, I've noticed that Canada, and with affiliation with American leaders, have been buying up a lot of the assets around the world, like your gold mines and water aquifers and things of that sort.
There's several different things that could be going on here, and you know they have this ultra-conservative grab all the resources and sit on them mentality. Part of that is a giant marketing scheme, too, and I can go into one thing, and you can remind me on this, the helium reserves. But the other is that they've either seen something that has scared the poop out of them, and I'm trying to keep it, you know, these words that are okay, hopefully poop is okay,
yeah.
out of these guys to where they think some asteroid is going to hit the planet, and so they're trying to grab everything and, you know, become the mole men or something, I don't know. Or in the Antarctic, there's in the Arctic, everything's sitting on the ocean, so it won't change the sea level. But down in the Antarctic, there's the glacier that is, you know, basically held back by a pebble right now. And that if it slips and falls into the ocean, they say that it could raise the worldwide sea level 20 to 30 feet or more, and that if this occurs, it's not going to be, push with the tide rising over days or weeks or years or whatever. It's going to be instantaneous. And just like what happened with Ponte Acha, whether that was man-made or, an act of God, at some point there are weather weapons out there that can create stuff like that. Even if you take a nuclear weapon and you set it off at the bottom of the ocean, it's going to create such a giant pressure wave and then a collapse and then a follow-up pressure wave. And they've actually done studies on this up in Alaska and actually set off nukes under the water, that you'll have a huge series of tidal waves around the world. And you got to remember that the majority of population throughout the world is on the coastline, and that at some point, if they control and know where all the assets and the resources are, they have the technology, they can allow this to occur. Some people believe that 911 was allowed to occur or whatever, so that they could clamp down, and that they knew in advance, even with all the carnivore and echelon and all the other software and hardware programs that they were running well before 9/11, that they should have been able to see, or, they say that there's no way that they could not have known that this was going to happen. And many believe that, they actually helped orchestrate it or whatever. Those opinions are those of others, and I have my own opinions in that regard. But the same thing, like with the glacier in the south, if that does go into the ocean and this does happen, there's already maps by Naval Science that were out a few years back, and it's real hard to find them now, that showed what the continent of North America and other continents would look like if this actually came about. And you can see some of the things that go towards, legitimate global warming, where we now have a northern passage above Canada where we've never had it before in recorded history. And you see things like that, and then I think Pillar B was one of the ice shelves that broke off. It was the size of, Rhode Island. It was huge, and they showed this whole picture in satellite photography literally breaking off, and how the ice sheets had literally melted and fallen back and then eventually just crumbled. And you can see that at some point there are things going on in the world. And if they really believe this, say they believe in global warming, say all this stuff is true, then why aren't they carrying on just like the space program and building, and I'm not joking, this may sound absurd, but giant snow blowers, with reverse osmosis or other type of purification systems, taking water from the sea and starting to spray it up on the caps on both ends and literally trying to build the poles back up. Because the one thing that really... that the poles themselves goes towards the super cooling effect of the Van Allen belts that surround the Earth, or the electromagnetic field. The electromagnetic field is our shield. It's literally our force field that protects us from the solar wind. And if they start putting all the pieces of the puzzle together, and if they really believed in global warming, then they would be doing things like that, and even building generating facilities up there to go ahead and man these stations and build the pumps and, literally start to build up. And this could literally in 5 to 10 years make a huge difference, but nothing like that is going on. And so you start to wonder, do they really believe in this whole global warming stuff? And I've looked at it, because one thing was, I worked at a sub-base down in San Diego as a port engineer for the Navy for Transportation Command. And when the Millennium Bug was happening, it was out, and there was all kinds of literature and all kinds of warnings and everything else. And the intel and the information guys who were working for us as the, port engineers did nothing really about it. It's as if they knew in advance that it was all a hoax. So when you think about it, what the Millennium Bug was, it was a marketing tool to sell computers.
And so global warming is a marketing tool?
To sell new low-energy light bulbs and refrigerators and cars and hybrids and, everything. And I'm not saying that a lot of that isn't bad and that we shouldn't be doing that anyways, but they're doing it under this whole fear and terror mentality rather than planning it from the government. Because what happened with OPEC in the 70s, you know, we had a wake-up call then. What happened? Did we start planning for any of this and to convert and to have literal, you know, alternative fuel sources and to even get people off the grid?
No, they did the opposite. That was what was so strange about that whole thing.
And then you start to realize that, no, they want everything on the grid. They want, you know, giant highways that are all super connected. They want giant, the infinite bus for electricity. They want the same thing for telecommunications, to where it's this giant network of grids, one layered on top of another, to where you cannot, as an individual, escape, and that they can know everything about you any given moment of the day, where you are, what you're doing, who you're doing it with, how long you're doing it with, talking to them, going to Starbucks, whatever. And when you start to peel back layers of the grids, you start to see that there is, like, you know, one of the things that was exposed in, they went after the Genovese and Gambino crime family syndicates in New York, and it was exposed in court documents that Nokia and Motorola were making the cell phones for general consumption for everyone, not just the Gambino and Genovese crime families and their buddies and syndicates and associates or whatever, but for everyone, for you and I to go out and buy, to where they could turn on the microphone and listen to your conversation, even if you turn the phone off.
But they have that in computers and TVs and numerous other things, don't they?
Well, no, and it gets much deeper. When you think about your wireless connection at home for your computer or your phone, it's actually a force field. And when you walk in to the home, you disturb that field, and they can pick that up on the feedback, and that's one reason why they're going to the fiber optics, because it's such a better conduit for signals coming and going. They can even do this with AC wire with a 110, to where they can use the AC as a carrier signal and actually piggyback other signals into and out of the home. And this is all like this is all being reported. This is all in Popular Science and other places, but people don't realize how it's being applied to literally carry on home invasions. I mean, to the point of where you don't even know what's going on, but others, whether it's, you know, big corporations or big government or people who want to do you harm or steal from you, they know more about you than you know about yourself.
Okay, so again, let me bring up the fact that, okay, you've got what is going on with your case?
Specifically, I started out on really minor, you know, compared to a lot of the other stuff that I've been shoved into and, you know, has really woken me up, is, you know, the Merch Marine. It's gone. Not only that, but also our fisheries, the tuna boats are gone, the canneries are gone. You see the sell-off of everything that's going on. I started to blow the whistle or complain. I tried to stop an explosion on board a government vessel, tried to stop dumping of hazardous materials on the same vessel. And rather than, you know, A, listening to me when I tried to stop it, in regards to the explosion, I was in charge of the board as a second assistant engineering officer on board. They had the third assistant engineering officer, junior officer, carry out the light-off procedure, and sure enough, there was a flashback and explosion, and he got burned. And it's like, okay, this guy knows what he's doing. We need to keep him around. And instead, those who were involved in it, including the chief engineer and others, they retaliate, and the company joins in, and the union joins in, and you start to realize that all the things that you thought of, and start to, you know, realize that the system is all a farce. A perfect example of that is we have a grievance and arbitration process. It's supposed to be held for us for federal maritime officers. It's been enacted. This goes back to the 1920s and 30s, and some of the acts even go back to the Constitution. Includes the Judiciary Act of 1789 and the Shipping Articles Act of 1791, et cetera, et cetera. But we have this industry board that's supposed to be for all federal maritime officers, and it's supposed to meet and convene every 30 days and to hear any and all grievances. And if there are grievances that are severe enough, like say the ship's going to leave tomorrow and they're trying to fire you or do something, then you ask for a convening of the Licensed Personnel Board. Within 24 hours, they hear the grievances, and hopefully they get you back on board because you're doing your job. You're not, you know, doing anything wrong. But the way it is now, this line item, this enormous line item in federal contracts, which is a system of due process, it's similar, like, say, the Uniform Code of Military Justice, or if somebody was paying to, you know, like the taxpayers, to provide district courts or the Ninth Circuit, and you woke up one day and the Ninth Circuit was missing. And what's happened is the Licensed Personnel Board, which is paid by the United States, and it was paid out in trust by the U.S. taxpayers, for these shipping companies and the industry, including the Federal Officers Association. They call it a union, but it's really not. It's more like a federal contractor, just like the shipping companies. They're paid to provide these services to federal maritime officers, this system of due process. Not only have they corrupted it, they've actually dissolved it so that we, if we have a grievance about pay, about safety, about the captain running guns in containers and bringing them into the United States for extra money on the side, whatever, we cannot get grievances heard. And when you think about how our fleet has shrunk and to where we, even on the few vessels that are left, which many of them pertain directly to the military, and we can't get grievances heard, where does that leave the rest of the country? You know, how safe are you at night if we can't complain about simple matters, say an explosion or a fire or, you know, dumping of hazardous materials, which in the bigger scheme of things is pretty minor. It's serious, but, you know, when you're talking about war and war profiteering and oil profiteering and other things, it's relatively minor.
So you're saying that they're dismantling the country and that they are squeezing out the, not only the Marines, and, or I mean the Merchant Marine and whatever, they're doing it to the truckers as well, which are hauling the cargo away and creating these ports down in Mexico and in Canada to circumvent all our port cities, and then they handed our ports over to these foreign governments.
Right, and that is an attack by foreign governments and those who are helping foreign governments and foreign corporations. Those are attacks upon the American people, and you can't see them any other way.
And so, and ultimately, by dismantling our economy is a way of just, instead of attacking us overtly, it's being done by breaking us down from within.
Well, and even the war in Afghanistan and Iraq is similar to what, you know, we did with the CIA with bin Laden in Afghanistan and creating him as a CIA construct, using him to sucker the Russians into Afghanistan, into this, you know, sand trap, and literally exhausting them in there for years on end, and then we're, you know, supplying the Mujahideen and others, even the Taliban and more. And now because we're a much more vital economy, and we've had so much more, and we're, you know, an extremely wealthy nation, they're doing it with Afghanistan first, and now Iraq, and then soon to be Iran, and however many countries for however long it takes to impoverish and dissolve the republic. So many people hate us around the world, they're trying to get us to just like Germany was, and literally we are in the same place. We've now taken on the position that Germany was in World War II, and China is now somehow, as a communist empire, is now the quote-unquote savior. You know, that somehow China is going to come in with Russia and other countries and save the world from the United States. And it's like, what? And a lot of this is about, it's about markets and all sorts of other stuff, because they're trying to do, just like here in the United States in the Civil War, they had North pitted against the South, right? The industrial North against the agrarian South. They're trying to set up the very same paradigm here in the United States in North America and South America. And if you think about it, Korea, North and South. Vietnam, North and South. Our own Civil War, North and South. That's really weird.
So what worked before works will continue to work, is what you're saying.
Divide and conquer.
Right.
You know, they did it in Germany, too, East and West. And now, though, they're taking it up a level, taking it up a notch, and that's where Chavez and some of these other players come in, who are, you know, they're puppets. They're strongmen who are put in just like, you know, Castro was in Cuba. To literally pit North America, industrial North, against the agrarian South, and to have a human race, you know, one side against the other, and have the foreign boogeyman, just like with Russia. And, you know, you don't find it kind of odd that at the very same time that we had a red purge going on under Stalin in Russia, we had a red scare here in the United States under McCarthy. Well, that's very coincidental.
I didn't follow that thought. I mean, I understand what you're saying to a point, but I'm not quite following
it. Well, in Russia, I mean, they killed millions, literally. It was tens of millions of people in Russia under Stalin. They had the Red Purge, right,
mm-hmm.
taking out political dissidents and those who would oppose them and the intelligentsia, the professional class. And then here at the very same time here in the United States under McCarthy and the Un-American Activities Committee, Commissioner Committee, and a bunch of other programs that were run at that time, we had the very same attack by Americans upon other Americans here, where people were, much like in our own Civil War, brother against brother, family member against family member, fellow worker against fellow worker, where you were expected to turn in your friends or people that you worked with to escape them coming after you.
Okay, so where's
that
the
very same thing is going on now?
Okay, so where's the paradigm that this is based off of? I mean, how far back does this template go?
It's a lot of templates laid on top of each other. They know human nature, so it's not just the North and South, which is a bigger paradigm. It's literally like taking Vietnam and splitting it in two, and then having puppet masters on one side and puppet master on the other, pitting the two internally against each other, and then on the bigger stage having the United States pitted against the communists in Russia. And it's literally all about a bunch of self-appointed royal families in all of these different countries, including the United States, who are and have been working together to control the masses.
So you're saying that they're the ones pulling the strings, the monarchies.
Yes, I mean, and they're not. If you look, like you've said yourself, Bush is related to Queen Elizabeth.
Uh-huh.
Well, that goes back to the Habsburgs, because even England itself is literally a thoroughfare. It's been stepped on, and it's actually coming more from Austria, Bavaria, and Germany.
Okay, and so...
I mean, why do you think they're naming these two vessels the Bertolf and the Vosch? I mean, that's like, you got to add things up and start going, okay, that's really weird. And then you look at, wow, all these people were knighted by the Queen of England. Oh, and Bertolf was also knighted by the King of England. And then you start looking at, like, the Order of the Knights of Malta and the Order of the Knights of the Star of India, which was basically an order of knights, more modern day, more contemporary, to go into India and to set up a system of, quote-unquote, royal families, self-appointed royal families, to own and control and impoverish the people of India.
Okay, where does Malta come from? I mean, what is this group... Is the Knights of Malta, what is that?
From Malta, the nation state of Malta.
Oh, okay. All right. I mean, they're not a branch of some other organization there.
No, it goes back to, like, the Templars, because even Christ spoke about that, about false temples to false gods. And if you look at what, these guys did even in Rome, they would have people come in and offer up their, I don't know if you ever saw this, but it's a great little toy. And it's a great way to kind of explain what's going on, is Disneyland used to have in their magic shop, they had this little mechanical hand that it would sit there and kind of like the hand in the Lurch or whatever and the Munsters, it would sit there with a hand out and you put a quarter in it and it grabs the quarter, takes it and puts it in the box and then comes back up and asks for another quarter. And it's like, it's cool to watch. Everybody does. They put their quarter in there, and it's like, wow, that's really cool trick, like whatever. And I wonder how they designed that and whatever. Well, that's what they used to do. Like even in Rome, they would build and design all these like really neat things. Like they had one, and you can watch this even on the History Channel. They show or expose a lot of this stuff, but not in that light, to where they would have like vases of water where you could come up and you put in like a pittance, and, like a coin, and it would give you, like, a cup of water. And people at the time were like, oh, my, that's magic. And if you think of some of our technology today, how many people can tear apart a computer and understand both the hardware and software of it and, not only build one, design one, but, fix it if it breaks or whatever. It's a very small percentage of the population. And if you start getting into software and programming, it's just like the church used to do with Latin, to where, the church would say the mass in a foreign language that no one understood or very few did, and they would get you to stand up, sit down, kneel, stand up, sit down, kneel, stand up, sit down, kneel, cross your hand, whatever, and it's just kind of like, okay. So to some extent, they're training you and getting you to live a very ritualistic life. And I'm Roman Catholic. You know, I went to Catholic grade school and high school and stuff, and I look at this, and I'm now, when my eyes have been opened from everything that's gone on and how I've seen that how everything that's supposed to be there, like our court systems, which is supposed to be a public trust, is under attack, and they're fortifying it, especially even after 9/11. They're firing court clerks, and they're hiring private clerks to where they're privatizing the courthouses themselves so that if you have a complaint, especially if it, you know, involves some big players, you're not going to make it into court. And at some point, like I even experienced this myself, where the U.S. Marshals are privatizing their service. They're hiring out, just like Blackwater and more, to where I had five marshals who weren't U.S. Marshals. They were private contractors. I went in to file an appeal to the Ninth Circuit in their Ninth Circuit office in L.A. U.S. District Court, where you're allowed to file it. They tried to say it was about, you know, it's only there for L.A. cases and whatever and stuff. But they had five, and where you file your appeal is a judicial decision. The court clerk's not supposed to decide that. You're supposed to be able to, you know, file it. They're supposed to pass it on. A judge rules on whether venue and jurisdiction, you know, is proper or not. But there, they're just supposed to pass it on to the Ninth Circuit, so it becomes kind of moot. But the five private marshals, just like Blackwater, showed me the door, wouldn't allow me to file my appeal, didn't charge me with anything, saying I did anything wrong. They called Homeland Security. Homeland Security pulls me over as I'm leaving the parking lot and seizes my vehicle. And that was in 2004 and happened right across from Senator Kerry's election campaign going on across the street.
That was
before I knew about the connections of Skull and Bones and John Kerry and how he'd been put up as a straw man basically to make sure that Bush would win. So that, you know, I mean, look at who Kerry is. John Kerry, everybody's, oh, he's a Democrat. Oh, he's, you know, he got Swift voted. Oh, he's a Vietnam vet. He came back and fought against the war and blah, 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 blah. He's now married to Teresa Hines, who made her way through South Africa. And if we remember apartheid and all kinds of other stuff that went on down there, she married Senator Hines of the Hines dynasty, ketchup and tomato paste and, you know, tomato soup and more. And now, you know, John Kerry has no intention of ending the war anytime soon because he's making more money off of selling ketchup and tomato paste and other products to the military and the federal government and internationally than he would if we were, or they perceive, than he would if we were in a time of peace.
Okay, now I'm going to have to do a break here just a second. And this is KHENLP 106.9 Salida, member-supported community radio. And again, the opinions expressed by the hosts and guests on this show do not necessarily represent the views of KHEN, its staff, or board of directors. And I just had a couple of announcements. We're having a spudtacular luncheon, a benefit for the neighbor-to-neighbor volunteers and the Chafee Shuttle, Wednesday, October 17th, 2007, 11 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. at the Senior Center, corner of 3rd and F. Get a baked potato and tons of toppings. There is a fee. Call for info at 530-0223. And please note that the Salida Hot Springs pool will be closed for fall cleaning October 15th through October 26th. For more information, call 539-6738. Okay, and again, I have my guest this evening is Eric Shine, and we're furthering on to connecting the dots from how he kind of awoke with his own experience with whistleblowing with what's going on with our merchant marine. Go ahead, Eric.
Well, and you look at what's going on with me, which started out relatively small, but then I stepped into bigger corruptions to where they were taking federal money that, you know, is to provide all these things on federal contracts. And the best example that I can draw is as if these shipping companies or federal contractors were contracted, like, say, Halliburton or KBR is in Iraq. And this is just an example or analogy so that people can get a good picture of what's going on. And that the federal government said, hey, Halliburton, KBR, we trust you so much. We think you do such a great job. We get more for our buck when we let you do it than having the government do it, which is kind of weird because, you know, the government's supposed to do it not for profit. And when you start adding profit in, it makes the price go up.
Of course.
You know, all you have to do is start looking at some of these contracts and you realize how much. But it's as if the government was saying, okay, Halliburton KBR, we want you to provide everything to the troops in Iraq because you can do it cheaper, you can do it better, you can do it faster, we get better quality. So we want you to provide the uniforms, the food, the munitions, the small arms, the M16s, the tanks, the Humvees, heck, you know, the tents, the meals, the water. You know, in fact, you're doing such a good job, and we get such good, bang for our buck, that we want you to also provide the uniform code of military justice. We want you to provide the two-edged sword that provides, you know, that's a shield and also a way to go after, you know, criminals within the military and more. That we want you to provide this system of internal administrative due process within the military, so that if anybody has grievances about food, they're not getting the munitions that they need on the front line, any kind of complaint, we want you to address it, whether it's against an individual soldier or by a soldier, against the command structure, it doesn't matter, we want you to take care of it. And then Halliburton says, sure, fine, they take all the money for doing all this stuff, and then rather than performing 110% on the contract, they perform 30%, and they start sending empty boxes of bullets with no bullets in them to the soldiers, and they start sending Humvees that are not up armored, and they start sending food that's been soaked in formaldehyde, and they start
be soaked in formaldehyde?
That's what they did in the Civil War.
Oh.
And this is a really bad. You start really digging into this stuff, and you start to realize that this is the game. What they do is, you know, the government will contract under very specific specifications, and it says a certain quality of meat, certain type of meat, certain grade of meat, certain weight of meat, delivered by such and such a date, freshness, you know, butchered on such a day, and then delivered on a day later or no more than 2 days later, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then these guys will figure out ways to beat all that, fight all that, take the money that they actually make, and use it to buy a bunch of lawyers to protect all the money that they take. And take, not make. There's a difference because they're supposed to perform on the contract as written and then get a percentage off the top. It's a fixed, you know, fixed percentage off the top. And it's a fixed percentage because they're doing such mass amounts, such large quantities, that even a 1% up to, say, a 10% is a lot of money. I mean, people have literally made their companies or corporations off of getting just one of these contracts. Guys like Ross Perot with the federal government, that's what really made him a, you know, big player. And what they're doing, guys like Senate Majority or former Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist, he's a supposed Christian, a supposed doctor, he's taking the Hippocratic Oath. And, you know, if you start looking a little bit deeper into what the Hippocratic Oath used to be, what it is now, I don't know if it's a problem with its roots or whatever, but these guys are not, their oath of ethics or whatever is somewhat wanting. But Bill Frist's father and brother stole billions of dollars from the U.S. Treasury through Medicare and Medicaid and actually had to pay back $1.7 billion. There's books out on there on this. There's all kinds of articles and stuff. It's a matter of record. Many of the U.S. attorneys got involved in this. It was false claims or QITAM or QITAM actions, federal contracting violations. They stole literally billions of dollars. The $1.7 billion that he had to pay back was a fraction of what they stole. And then Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist, when he was Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist, and not just, you know, Senator Bill Frist, he's in there advocating against the death tax and property tax or estate tax or Paris Hilton tax, because he stood to, his father had just died, and stood to inherit billions of dollars from his father, from their estate that was stolen from the U.S. Treasury. These are the kind of people we have representing us right now.
Leaves a lot to be desired, doesn't it?
Well, and there are a bunch of war profiteers and oil profiteers, and I mentioned about the helium reserve, and let me touch on that real quick, because what they're doing, this whole thing on global warming, they're finding resources everywhere. There's never been this high a level of discovery around the world on all forms of natural resources. Oil, gold, silver, copper, you know, anything and everything you can possibly imagine. They're looking for it, and they're using very high-tech technology to do it, you know, and map all this stuff out. And what they do is just like in the 1920s and 30s that they did with a portion of the helium reserve. We were the only producers of helium in the world at the time. We actually had contracts with Poland, well, not Poland, Czechoslovakia. We had contracts with the Nazis, with Germany at the time, and the Hindenburg and the Graf Zeppelin were supposed to be filled with helium rather than hydrogen, which is flammable to the point of being inflammable, which means explosive. And the Germans had pretty good success with safety on this stuff, but had helium been in those the Hindenburg, it would not have exploded like it did, but there's some conjecture on some other things. But anyways, the helium reserve itself, we were the only producers, suppliers of it in the world. It's a naturally mined gas. And what they did was that those involved, Goodyear was working tightly with Zeppelin before all this broke, we were going to sell, we actually had contracts to sell the Germans the helium, and because they marched into Poland and Czechoslovakia, we cut them off and said, sorry, we're not going to deliver this because you might use it for war. And they do use helium for a lot of things, special weaponry, electron microscopes, lasers, and all sorts of other stuff. Congressman Christopher Cox, who's from Dana Point out here in California, he was a congressman who more recently, in the last year or year and a half, was appointed to head the SEC, or Securities Exchange Commission. And what he did was he found this stash of helium from the helium reserve from the 1920s or 30s that very few people would know about. It's like finding an old gold mine that was registered and then all the records were lost and somebody comes across like a, you know, an old map to a gold mine or whatever. And he discovers this stuff. He works across both aisles between the Democrats and Republicans to sell this U.S. Treasury asset, does such a good job working across both aisles that he gets appointed to head the SEC so that he can carry on data mining of old corporations and old families and old, you know, public and private trusts so that they can find all these things that have, you know, been forgotten and make a bunch of money by selling them. And so what they're doing with all the stuff right now with the global warming and more is that they're finding, and this is with the National Strategic Oil Reserve and more, is they're going around the world, not just here in the United States, but around the world, and capping oil wells and other finds and stashing them just like they did with that helium reserve so that they can, a generation or two down the road, pass these things on to their family and family members and friends and live off of the backs of other people for the rest of their lives.
So am I following? Because, I mean, there was this time when my husband's family had some oil wells.
I don't know if you can speak closer.
There was a time when my husband's family had some oil wells, and then they'd received some somebody inquiring into wanting to know if they would sell them off, and they had to go through generations of lots of relatives, and I couldn't even. It kind of struck me odd as why they would go to that extent for wells that they, you know, hadn't even really been producing. Although I know that they were probably capped back in the 40s.
Right.
And so.
But they've come up with all kinds of new technology, the way to, like, you know, make a less productive or no longer productive well, and really, you know, they force water in, they force steam, and they do all kinds of other stuff, and even open up other, because, you know, sometimes. If you get a better map of where the oil's at, you could have hit a pocket, actually taken out a portion of the oil, and it's not producing for whatever reason, you know, because of the pocket. But you're sitting on a stash that is literally untouched, and you've only taken off a couple percent of the entire field.
Okay. So, all right.
So it may be a much more productive, you know, just because of the technology or the individuals or that it ceased to be productive does not mean that there's not still a lot of oil sitting on top of that, you know,
uh-huh.
or in that well, or in that, you know, reserve or that field.
Okay. So go ahead on with your case again so that we can kind of get people aware of what
you're doing. The Coast Guard's been prosecuting me for the last 5 years in this military tribunal. They've actually brought the charges against me for, quote-unquote, being depressed. They've seized medical records, falsified medical records, put out a bolo on me saying that I may be dangerous. And, you know, a lot of that is because I can put pieces of the puzzle together that other people can't. And I'm willing to speak about it, you know, and not because I do believe that there is a difference between what is public and what is private. At some point, you know, and that's why we had antitrust laws, things that are private should not grow to the size of, like, say, what Bill Gates is today, or Rupert Murdoch and others, to where they own and control, and one individual has more authority, more power, more money than the majority of the population.
But that isn't that what kind of what they're up to now, is trying to shrink the middle class?
Yes. Well, okay. And it's not just shrink the middle class. It's literally to take out, you know, if you've got half a brain and you know, decent education, you're a target. You're a marked person because they do not want any type of opposition, and they're willing to go to any lengths. You know, I mean, look at what happened with Daschle, the anthrax attacks. Look at what happened with Kennedy, his plane going down. I'm trying to think of not Brown, but there's a lot of people under Clinton, like Brown and others, who, you know, there were actually more suicides of high-ranking officials under Clinton than any other president ever. And I don't know if it would include this president, because there's probably been a lot of people that have...
I heard the term Arkansided.
Sorry?
I heard the term Arkansided.
Well, or the other one is murder by suicide.
Okay. So go ahead with you again with your what's happening with you and why.
Well, the lieutenant who brought the charges against me actually brought them in the face of open civil complaints, Article 3 proceedings in the court against the shipping companies, federal contractors, and the Federal Officers Association. They got the Coast Guard, now Homeland Security, to bring an Article 2 executive branch administrative proceeding against me, even though they waited until the Coast Guard was in Homeland Security to do it. So they used a branch of the military under direct control of the president to bring charges against me for, quote-unquote, being depressed. And it's like, what? And you have to really look at, and this goes to the whole thing of the, you know, self-appointed royal families and others, is that it's called a bill of attainder. That's A-T-T-A-I-N-D-E-R, and hopefully I'm not butchering the pronunciation.
So with what? So with whatever court they're trying to, you know, rule these things under, then that would actually carry over to into the public, would it not? I mean, if you can get put up on charges of being depressed, anybody could, isn't that?
Well, yeah, no, it's a good point, and I'll point you to a case that can actually prove that to you. There's a case called Rendon versus TSA, Transportation Security Administration. It used to be Transportation Safety Administration, of course. That all morphed and changed with the Patriot Act and more. But Rendon, and I believe it's R-E-N-D-O-N versus TSA, the very same ALJ or administrative law judge who's hearing my case, supposedly, ruled on this case. And it was a Homeland Security agent who actually was, when he's off the clock, he's still on the clock. You know, if he's traveling, he's still on the clock. He was going through an airport, and he's just like a police officer. If anything happens, he has to turn to. And he's going through the airport, and he goes through a screening facility. He curses out a screener, uses a curse word, and they go ahead and cite him, fine him, $700 for cursing, free speech violation. And this is in a public, you know, transportation facility. And he goes before an administrative law judge, Article 2 proceedings. It wasn't Commerce, it was TSA. He's found that the $700 fine, this ALJ Brzezinski finds that this $700 fine is just. It gets appealed to the Sixth Circuit, which converts it over to civilian control to a large extent, and to where this, you know, circuit decision can be imposed upon, you know, especially if lawyers aren't paying attention. Because you have to really, you know, this whole case was set up. The agent and Brzezinski and others created this case so that they could have this scam of citing people $700 for cursing, not just at an airport, but a rail station, a bus station, even if you're in a taxi, which is part of the public transportation system, you could be fined $700. Or if a police officer pulls you over on a public highway, $700 fine if you cuss them out and say, you know, why are you giving me a blank, blank ticket? $700 fine. And they've upheld, the Sixth Circuit upheld, that it was not a burden upon free speech.
So, in other words, it's kind of like the cart before the horse, is what you're saying, that they're creating the fine without a law and then making a precedent there.
Exactly. And that's the problem with being a common law country. It's a very good question because it does bring up that issue. And that's part of the problem here in America, just like England and other countries, is that we are a common law country, and that at some point, if you don't enforce your rights, you have no rights, because if the government use like a program it's using right now called legal warfare or lawfare to go after American citizens and create bad precedents. And this goes into the whole concept of unitary executive too. All this stuff is just so intermeshed, and trying to untangle it, it really takes you some time. And, you know, if you slow down and listen and try to grasp some of this stuff, and, you know, even on this tape, if it's, you know, the archive, if you pull it up and listen to it, you really got to, and then go out and do some research and figure things out on your own and go on to Wikipedia and other places in the net. But the unitary executive is basically that Congress is not a branch of the government anymore. It's a tree unto itself. That the executive branch is no longer a branch, that it's a tree unto itself. And that the judiciary is no longer a branch, but a tree unto itself. And this gets into the whole biblical thing of the beast government or the beast. And, you know, you cut one head off and ten more grow. They believe that Congress passes acts that only apply to Congress. And that's this whole concept of unitary executive. And that the president, who controls the executive branch as a tree unto itself, has and that Congress itself has not only legislative, executive, but also judicial powers unto itself. And in that branch of government, the legislature, it's the acts of Congress that apply to it. In the executive branch, or tree, that the executive branch has executive orders. And those executive orders that set policy are the law for that branch.
And then
it has a whole system of not just legislative, which are those executive orders, but also executive and judicial powers within the executive branch. And that goes to the Administrative Procedure Act, which is this quasi-judicial system of internal administrative due process that's not supposed to or intended to take away any life, liberty, or property, just like the UCMJ or Uniform Code of Military Justice. But then that somehow the judiciary is a branch unto itself, or a tree unto itself, and that it has its own legislative, executive, and judicial powers, and that the controlling law for the judiciary is case precedents and not acts of Congress.
So we're supposed to follow all these different rules, and nobody, I can't imagine how anybody knows what.
It's not constitutional, and it's about dissolution. It's about vertical integration of everything under the president, creating a tyrant king. It stands in opposition to everything that this country has stood for since its Declaration of Independence. You know, even under Homeland Security now, corporations come under that. And this is something that even Hoover and others, even Truman and more, tried to pull in seizing, like, the mines and other stuff like that, and seizing control of the labor. President Bush has, under Homeland Security, seized control of all unions, all labor, all industries, and to a large extent, he is a dictator.
But he's not nationalizing it.
What do you mean?
In some of these dictatorships or whatever, if I'm following you correctly, they would nationalize that sort of thing.
Well, they are, but not under nationalizing it like Roosevelt did,
right,
or like some of the countries in South America are doing it, to where it's, you know, nationalizing it to federalize it and to standardize the laws, rules, regulations, policies, safety standards, you know, just like they did this in the railroads. They seized control of and nationalized the railroads, you know, actually several times. But they did this in the 30s and 40s, and it was to literally get everybody on the same page, which is, you know, can be a very good thing to an extent if it's done properly and you don't step upon union rights or civil rights or contractual rights. But these guys are absolutely insane. They're fascists. There's no other way to look at them, that they're corporatists, they're collectivists who wish to put out the little guy out of business. And you really have to look at some of these, like the shipping companies. These shipping companies are federal employers that sign, they're federal contractors. They sign what are called general agency agreements. They become an arm or extension or agency of the United States. They're a U.S. corporation. They're a government corporation. But they also have the antitrust laws waived for them. And guess what? They're all members of the Pacific Maritime Association. They're enormous in their own individual right. But when you combine them together into an association like the PMA, the Pacific Maritime Association, and start to look deeper into who the PMA is and what they're all about, you start to find out who else is a member of the PMA. Guess who else is a member?
I don't know if this makes any sense or not, but
hear me out. Walmart.
Okay. Uh-huh.
So you have Walmart, which is literally the privatized PX of the federal government, in bed with a bunch of U.S. corporations that have the antitrust laws waived, who are not only trying to shut down the U.S. ports so that longshoremen and others don't make a decent living, and even merchant seamen and more, but that all of this is being outsourced to foreign nationals. So that even our waterways, which goes back to the issue of the merchant marine, that inland waterways up the Mississippi, the Great Lakes, and more, they're trying to bring in foreign labor to work our own waterways.
Okay, so wouldn't it be then that the corporations are competing with the corporation of the United States? Does that make
which sense? Is the people, which mm-hmm. is, you know, I mean, you can look at the United States of America as a corporation. It is to a certain extent, but not wasn't really intended to be.
Well, of course not. But,
sorry?
Of course not, but that's kind of what it sounds like it's turning into of sorts.
Well, but you have to understand, though, too, like here's a good example. What they're doing, and they did this in World War II and prior to the Great Depression, all this stuff is being orchestrated. Not only a depression, but war is the greatest movement of capital from the middle class and the poor to the extremely wealthy, because literally they can steal much easier, not only in a time of depression but in a war, because all bets are off. You know, like they like to use it as if under a war all civil rights, all constitutional rights and protections are somehow void. You know, look what we did to the Japanese in the internment camp. But what these guys are doing is they're first and foremost nationalizing or federalizing things. They then privatize them, pass them into their own hands, and then internationalize them or move them out of the country. And this is like taking, say, gold from Fort Knox, selling it on the market to themselves, moving it outside of the country, selling it internationally, and then pulling the economy here in the United States so that they can take that gold, that U.S. Treasury asset, that money that they've stolen from the U.S. taxpayers, bring it back in and reinvest it, and then become the robber barons, just like the railroad captains of the late 1800s did, and recapitalize that money that they've stolen from the Americans and reinvest it under their own name here back in the United States.
So they kind of created a trail of their own ownership after they
taken it from us, stolen.
Mm-hmm.
And putting it into their own hands first and foremost in this country, then in moving it, like a good example, American President Lines. It was our premier American flag carrier for the longest period of time. It named all its vessels after American presidents. It was sold to Neptune Orient Lines, a Singaporean-owned and controlled Singaporean corporation, where the government owned majority stake in this corporation. Well, they didn't just sell that to Singapore or these Singaporean corporations or the Singaporean government. They sold it to themselves, working with a bunch of people in Singapore to sell off this U.S. Treasury asset to themselves, make it look like they're selling it to people in Singapore, pennies on the dollar. They move it out of the country. They move control over there as if it was some sale to a foreign, you know, as a business venture. And then what they do is they take all the control of the assets, the stack trains, the railroads, the ports, and more, and, move those assets out of the country. And then they also change, because this goes to flags just as much like flags of convenience. They believe, just like our U.S. embassy overseas is considered sovereign soil, just like an American flag vessel is, you know, under the American flag is considered sovereign soil, they feel or believe that a U.S. corporation under the flag of the corporation is corporate soil. And so they're doing the very same thing that a nation state would do, but they're converting it to the commercial or private sector to where now a Chinese corporation comes into the United States, and they've tried to do this. They've tried to bring in their own Chinese nationals even into the ports, to where, say, China buys a facility at one of the ports. Well, that is and would be then sovereign soil of this Chinese corporation and or the Chinese government, and they can basically do whatever they want with it. And it's like, what? So all the safeguards as to the nation state and the people of, say, a republic or a civilization or a nation are being taken down and dismantled piece by piece by piece, and all of it is aimed at taking down the republic so as to steal all of the assets.
So then it's also their benefit then to bankrupt the country.
Yes. Well, and not just bankrupt it and change the name. Like, because the bankruptcy was carried out in 1933, I believe. But, you know, you have to look at what happened at that very same time. Roosevelt also put out a decree under executive order to seize the four precious metals of the American citizens, which was gold, silver, steel, and I'm not sure if the fourth was lead. But there's some real good articles on this out, and you can search on the net and other places. And 40% of Americans, without a shot, without rebellion, turned over their gold. Think about that.
Did they get paid anything for it, or just turned
no.
out? Really?
No.
Oh.
No.
Wow.
And then you think of the gold standard, and then also the gold reserve, which is separate and distinct from that. The gold standard was tying, you know, our currency to a commodity such as gold. And then the gold reserve, though, was holding that gold in reserve, you know, so that our currency that's tied to that commodity, that we had so much of it on reserve. There's some really good books on this, too. Thieves in the Temple by Dr. Ekelishan, G. Edward Griffin. I'm trying to think of what his book was called. But it gets into the whole The Creature from Jekyll Island. And, you know, gets into the Federal Reserve System and our whole banking system. And you realize there was a whole battle about this in the 1700s and 1800s. And, you know, our Civil War was part of that, too. They say it was about slavery, and that was only a piece of it. And I'll show you how. Like, if you look at the immigration issue right now, you go to the Three-Fifths Compromise. What they're doing, the Electoral College was created, and a lot of people don't understand this. And, you know, if you read that one book I mentioned by Akhil Reed Amar, it gets into this a little bit, but you have to dig a little bit deeper and know the bigger picture. Is in the 1800s, the South was going into the North to grab free black men to bring them to the South, because under the Electoral College system, it goes by inhabitants. It doesn't go by freemen. It doesn't go by citizens or voters. It goes by inhabitants. And the reason for this, the reason it was constructed, well, at the time, women couldn't vote. So, but they should get representation. Babies can't vote. Children can't vote, but they are a human being. They should have representation. Indians can't vote, but they should have representation. Slaves can't vote, but they should get representation. So they came up with this compromise, which was to allow all those who don't have direct representation by the ability to vote, and this includes prisoners, that somehow under the Electoral College, going by inhabitants only, people living there, whether they're immigrants, aliens, prisoners, wives, children, freemen, you know, slaves, whatever, they had representation by the number of inhabitants. And then we have the popular vote. And if you look at what happened with Al Gore, he lost the election under the Electoral College votes. And they've been gaming the system and redistricting it from behind the scenes and playing these games not only with immigration and more, but even in building prisons, because those prisoners count as votes under the Electoral College system, but they don't have a popular vote because they're not allowed to vote. And you start to look at all of this in the bigger scheme of things, and you see that our republic is literally being stolen from us right in front of our eyes, because we cannot pay attention and we are not well-versed enough, not only in our own Constitution, but our own history, to address these things and say, whoa, 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 you're not going to pull that one on me. And we actually have foreign nationals and foreign governments who know our own country and our own republic and our own Constitution better than we do, and they're using it as a weapon against us.
Well, but it also sounds like they're just clouding the laws and issues so much so that anybody that did know wouldn't recognize what was going on. Am I?
Well, and it's important, too, because that goes back to the Bible, that in there it says about the end times and people, I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, people literally want to just, you know, kill themselves, that they won't, and they won't be able to, that they'll be, and it's because everything that they knew, everything that they understood in the Republic, rule of law, pensions, you know, medical benefits, all these things, and even the issue on medical benefits is not being debated properly, but I'll get to that in a moment. But all these things that they knew about civilization are being torn down intentionally. They're being deconstructed because they want to steal all this stuff, move it into the next big scam or scheme or collective like the North American Union, and start all over and make a killing. I mean, there's things going on now that, like, they're stealing the death benefits of soldiers, which is abhorrent. And they did this in Vietnam to where as the death count, body count went up to 58,000 or more, and that's not including all the federal contractors and others and, you know, people from the other side, quote-unquote, or so to speak, you know, Vietnamese nationals. When the body count went up, the accountability went down. The soldiers were insured for $100,000 per soldier. The corrupt lawyers, politicians, and judges then stole the death benefits of these soldiers. And when you start to realize that, because there's signs of this, like Jack Abramoff, the whole scandal with him, he set up, they had the two Indian tribes gaming against each other, and literally for the gaming rights. One tribe lost, one tribe won the gaming rights, the other one lost. He goes back to the tribe that lost and says, hey, we'll help you out, we'll set up death benefits and life insurance for you guys. Well, they didn't reveal to them that, you know, through full disclosure, that when the Indians would die, that the death benefits were going to be paid out into Jack Abramoff's private trust. So he was literally, every time an Indian would die, you know, it might as well go on. These are games that have been around for a long time. They're confidence games. They're scams. They're schemes. They're rackets. It makes Jack Abramoff want to go on and sell them a bunch of liquor and guns so the Indians will start shooting themselves up so they die sooner so they can collect the death benefits. You know, so Jack Abramoff can pocket the death benefits. This very same type of scam, which is a trickle-down form of, you know, economics of the bigger scams that are being run against the soldiers and federal troops and even state troops, militia, National Guard, and more, is the two women out here in L.A. were going around and insuring the homeless. And you got to remember, 50% of the homeless are veterans, and which is just a travesty in and of itself. But they were insuring the homeless, and then I guess the death benefits weren't coming in quick enough because the homeless were figuring out ways to survive somehow. So these two women actually got caught in the racket that they had constructed because they went out and started to kill the homeless so that they could collect the death benefits quicker. And those are, you know, you can't just ignore that and say, well, that's really nasty. Those people should be hung, you know, whatever, or imprisoned for life or, you know. No, it's a sign of the times and what's going on in the bigger picture, and people need to look at that and start to investigate a little bit closer and say, aha, you rat bastards, you guys should not be doing what you are doing, and you must be held accountable for it, because these guys are no better. They're members of a death cult. You know, that's what war is. They can steal more from so many more people, including technology and other things. You know, Smedley Butler wrote a really good book on this, War is a Racket. He gets into, like, where they made mosquito netting for France. Well, the only problem at the time was France didn't have mosquitoes. And they made hundreds of thousands. Huh?
Really? They didn't?
Yeah, I don't know. That's what's in the book. And I'm, like, going, wow, that's kind of interesting. This country doesn't have mosquitoes. But, you know, I guess Ireland doesn't have snakes either, right? Or,
right.
Or they didn't for a very long time, thanks to, who's that, St. Patrick or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
Or the story goes. But, you know, and this is in the book, and what they did was, though, they warehoused the hundreds of thousands of mosquito netting that they manufactured because, A, they didn't need it. But what they do is they take that as surplus and then sell all this stuff after the war is over. But guess who gets to pay for it all? U.S. taxpayer.
Mm-hmm.
And then all this stuff is made, not just lumber and coal and timber and technology and resources and, you know, you can go down the whole long laundry list, even property, to where General Electric got huge facilities for $2. The government just gave it to them. And it was people within the government who were cutting the deals, to give GE, their best friend, you know, enormous tracts of land for a dollar or two. And then, of course, you know, who do you think these people go work for after they leave government service?
Okay, but you, when you were saying that the part on the life benefits were during the Vietnam War, from what I understand, they're still doing that in this war.
Exactly. And that's what's more disturbing, because they're insuring, it was originally like $220,000 or $240,000, and then they upped it to $440,000 through an act of Congress, and then they supplemented that for private insurance, $600,000. They're collecting all these taxes upon their wages. This is just another way to tax the soldiers. And then when they're injured in Iraq and they go to Germany and say they die in Germany, God forbid, they say, no, you can't collect because you didn't die in the war zone. It's like, what? It doesn't matter. In a war of terror that's supposed to be global, anywhere you are in the world, even if you're on training or at home asleep and you die and you're a soldier, you should be getting the death benefits, period. You know, whatever you're insured for or whatever, and they should all be the same and it should be all paid out and whatever. But instead, they've set up all these rackets and scams that include the courts.
Well, there's something also, too, about the straw man being set up on the VA benefits, too.
Well, and that goes to, like, Edwin Crosby III. He brought up a whole program of the names or the SPUD numbers or SBN numbers on the back of the DD-214s. And what they're doing is they're identifying people illicitly, improperly, as, say, a bedwetter or a homosexual, and then they're passing out these numbers and telling people that they have to report for work or employment or prospective job with their DD-214 or discharge. And the employers or prospective employers are getting these sheets, these cheat sheets, that tell them what these numbers mean. And it's basically a way to identify and say, don't hire this guy, in a covert way. And what they're doing is, you know, all you need is 10%, but the percentages are much higher. But if you take all the soldiers, you know, think of how many were in World War II, you take all, and these are rackets that ran all the way back to Roman times. I'm telling you, these are not like new games or new rackets. They may look a little bit different, and people are appalled by, you know, even the discovery of such criminal activity, you know, such heinous crimes carried out. I mean, because literally it gets to the point of euthanasia. They're literally going after federal troops and killing them in this fashion. Is that way these people end up on the street? Remember, 50% of the homeless are veterans. And at some point, there's women already that are going out and insuring the homeless people and collecting the death benefits. You have to see that this is a program, an intentional program, to take out federal officers, federal personnel, military officers, military personnel, and not to just deprive them of their VA benefits and GI rights and other protections and stuff like that, but to literally profit off of their death.
So there wouldn't be any, I mean, so if they're exposed to certain DU and various things like that, it's only to their advantage to...
Well, it's better because they're guaranteed to die. And at some point, if they have an insurance, and you have to look at this, like even on the radio, and pay closer attention to the radio and some of the programs that come on. On the radio, they're advertising that you can sell your life insurance.
Right.
I'm just blown away. It's like, and I've heard it I don't know how many times, and it just struck me the other day. When I heard it again, and, you know, maybe it was because I was thinking about certain things or whatever, but what they're doing is when you sell your life insurance and they tell you, oh, take that vacation you've always wanted, you don't need it, you know, blah, 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 blah. When you sell your life insurance, you think it goes away? They dissolve the account?
No.
No, they keep it. They keep paying on it, and when you die, they profit from it. And they could actually, they own your life insurance now. You've signed it over to them. They could increase it. They could change it to where they get double payout for suicide or something or whatever, and they just have to pay like a higher rate for it. But then they could put you in the position where you might even do that, or to where now you're worth more money dead to certain people than you are alive. And it's like, why would people sell their life insurance? And if they really thought for a moment and said, you know what, that really does, yeah, that is crazy. Because that takes my life insurance, puts it in somebody else's hands to where they will make money off of my death. And it's like, you know, I use this analogy too, is like for the medical industry and more, is if it's profitable to break legs, you know, to cure broken legs, like in the hospital and mend legs and set them, then people will go out and break legs. Who do you think does that? It's the mob. And you start to realize it's like, you know, we've got a really, really, this whole system of capitalism, extreme capitalism, to where, like, you know, because they used to do this. This was in Rome. This was under Nero, the fire brigands for Rome at the time. And then this is even here in our own country for a very long time, is you had to pay them a stipend for them to protect your house. It was almost like
this protection money.
You know, say you paid one private fire brigade to protect your home, and a fire breaks out, and this other fire brigade is there. They can't and they won't touch your home because, A, you haven't paid them, and, B, it's very territorial. And at some point, your house could burn down, even though there's a fire brigade there, but it's not the fire brigade that you paid. And so it's a form of, like, protection or protectionism, but it goes into almost like what the mob used to do with the rackets, where they would, you know, confidence men would come out and charge you and ask for protection or payments or stipends to make sure that your business wouldn't get broken up. And it's a complete racket. And the very, that's why we have public trust, though, like the fire department that serves all people and that we pay our taxes for, and it goes in, and it goes like, there's a fire, and they respond. They don't ask who it is. They don't ask what part of town it's in. They don't ask how this fire got. They go put it out, period, because there could be people next door to them or down the street who may pay more taxes or whatever. At some point, you only protect the entire population or the collective or the whole by protecting the individual. And that's the thing that we've forgotten the most, that we believe to protect the chain, you need to guard the chain and not each individual link in the chain or each system of protection or national security or civil defense that we've set up within this country. Which is, again, goes back to the Merchant Marine, which is a part of this enormous and complex system that was set up to protect our country. And you can hear what's going on with the food, the fish, and more that's making it in the country from China and other places. Our fisheries have been outsourced. Our United States Merchant Marine have been outsourced. Now, not only does China have the means through the largest Merchant Marine in the world, but they have the reason to build a large deep water Navy, and they're doing it. And that goes to projection of power, and that goes to creating a foreign boogeyman, and that goes to creating either the next Cold War or hot war, or world war. And these guys, like I've mentioned to you before about Admiral Fallon, you know, they didn't put that guy in charge of the second largest school district in the nation to maintain it as a nursery for chemists and engineers and professors and teachers and politicians and others. They put him in there to turn it into a nursery for soldiers, period.
So, ultimately, it looks like then our primary gross national product would be military and or police.
Right, and it doesn't have to be. And mm-hmm. If you don't want to live in a global gulag or a national police state, then we need to confront this now and end it. I mean, the English, you know, they chose and went that way. And to some extent, what they're trying to do is they're trying to get us to the point to where we do fight against this and we do resist and you know, we hopefully tear down the military-industrial complex to a large degree and make us more like an island like Britain was to where Canada, the United States, and Mexico are one nation, which when you think about it, it's not a bad idea. And moving in that direction and making all our railroads meet at the borders and making them all same or similar and getting pollution controls and regulations and everything more same and similar, court systems and more, and homogenizing them before you go to break down the borders, which is not what they've done. They're just trying to break down the borders and force this upon everybody. And the only reason that they're doing it is for complete chaos so that they can steal as much from as many people as possible in such a quick, short period of time.
Well, I kind of figured like we're the last country in the world that had, yeah, and the rest of the country, I mean, we've been practicing on all these other countries for years, and now it's, you know, that's who's left is ourselves. Is that
well, and much of the things that we've been using overseas to prey upon other countries, the military and more, you know, that goes back to that 66 million acres that we have worldwide, not just in this nation, worldwide. We have 130 bases in 130 countries. you know, Cuba's our enemy, but we have two military bases there. It's like, that's weird. And you start to realize it's like, you know, Castro's a puppet. He was put up by our government. Chavez in Venezuela, he's a puppet. They're setting all this up. They're just strongmen, just like Noriega was in Panama, just like Saddam Hussein was in Iraq, just like the Shah was in Iran. You know, and you can go through just about every nation state in the world. We've been playing this game. We are the Roman Empire, or an extension therefrom, and all you have to do is start looking at EWF and WWF and extreme fighting. And one of the first things that Bush did when he got into power was make sure that there was a Coliseum in D.C. and move the senators there, or create the team of the senators, so that there was literally a Coliseum for what would eventually become blood sports.
So what it kind of looks like to me, like, isn't the U.N. applying for control of the oceans?
Say again?
Isn't the U.N. applying for control of the oceans?
Well, there's a whole battle now, and you've seen what's going on with Russia and the Arctic and the landmass and them planting the flag and all this other stuff. They're trying to use the Discovery Clause, but the Discovery Clause is pretty interesting because they're not just using it for landmasses and for the oceans and more and the natural resources that are in the oceans. And this should all be a place where we come together, just like space. But they're trying to militarize and weaponize and you know, carry on supposedly U.S. hegemony, or that's what they're being told, over everything. And part of that is we're so very close to getting off this planet and getting out into deep space, and I mean with people on other planets, literally on habitable planets, that they cannot allow that unless we are a piece of property for the corporation or the corporate nation state. And so many of these things are going on because we're at that verge, and they don't want us going off and starting some other civilization on another planet to where, you know, they don't own or control it.
Okay, so then it would almost appear then the UN would be working on the behalf of the monarchies then. Is that what?
Sure.
Okay.
Well, or private money, because it goes back to the feudal system, which, you know, who does Congress work for? Who pays them? The Federal Reserve. They get paid in Federal Reserve notes. Who pays the executive branch and the military? They get paid in Federal Reserve notes. Well, who pays the judiciary, who should, like, make sure that all this stuff is in keeping with the Constitution? Well, they all get paid in Federal Reserve notes. What are Federal Reserve notes? Well, they're notes that are put out by a private banking cartel. It's just like an oil cartel or a drug cartel. There's no difference. It's not the American people.
So the banking cartel is controlled by?
Well, if you start looking deeper into things like Rothschild and Moore, his family, and they say that there was these five families who control the world, it's supposedly or allegedly the five heir apparents of Rothschild, his sons, five sons. And if you look at what the Rothschilds own and control, which went through, you know, England, he moved from Bavaria, I believe, to England, to London. And they set the Rothschild family sets the gold standard, the price of gold, every day, twice a day. What kind of family gets that kind of control over the world? Do you know how much control that is? That's like setting the price of milk for the world, but far worse because you get a lot more with gold. That's like setting the price of oil for the world. That's like setting the price of water for the world if it was actually completely controlled in an entirely private asset, which they're trying to move towards. That's like setting the price for medicine for the world. What kind of control, what kind of family gets that kind of control in a modern world, you know, whether you want to call it globalist or, you know, a global civilization or global community, to where a family gets that kind of control? That's like, you know, the families in South America that control the drug trade. There's no difference.
So it wouldn't be the church or the monarchy?
Well, the church is involved as well, the Catholic Church. I mean, if you look back into the 300, the year 300 A.D., what they did was they literally, you know, destroyed the Empire of Rome, or made it look like they did. They created the Holy Roman Catholic Church, Constantine and, you know, creation of Constantinople and all sorts of other things that went on at the time. The senators became the cardinals in the church.
Hmm.
And so, literally, we have the the Holy Roman Empire as, you know, with the face of the Holy Roman Catholic Church. Look at the amount of money. What other country in the world has something like the Vatican, which is a nation state within a nation state? Well, we do. Washington, D.C. is really its own territory or district or federal property, or this literally what has become a federal nation state within the nation state, and they're trying to set up the very same thing in Israel right now. And then you start to realize that what's going on in the Middle East is the same thing that they carried on in the European Union, in amalgamation of all the states there, nation states, that they're doing here in North America and trying to do in Asia. But in the Middle East, you have some hatreds that go back thousands of years because they're all blood brothers. I mean, these are all the different tribes and stuff. They're all so interrelated. People say that they're not, and they want to be different and set it apart, but they're far more related than they care to imagine. And at some point, you realize that the only way to bring all these nations together is just like Genghis Khan and Attila the Hun and others used to do, is they would go out and attack their own people, and they would turn them into the quote-unquote citizen soldiers and make the people fear these attacks, make them think that they were coming from outside, and marshal their troops, gather them together. And the easiest way to do that is to get them all afraid and you know, to the fevered pitch of war, to where now, and we learn this even at the academy when we first come in, is they break us down. They take everything away from us. They cut our hair, make us walk 6 inches from the wall, don't allow us to speak, and they try to break you down so that they can build you up in what they want, you know, which is a soldier. And they're trying to do the very same thing to all of the Middle East by literally pulverizing it into a bunch of little pieces and then build it back up into a more Western European form of what used to be the Ottoman Empire or Turkish Empire. Which is, and with Israel as the, you know, just like Washington, D.C., as the capital for that entire Middle Eastern region.
But it seems to me, again, it comes back to the fact that people, when they do, like the Night of the Long Knives, when they get the guys out there that are doing the work for the leadership or whatever,
right,
then they turn around and turn against their own people that were doing the work for them. And it,
of course.
And people don't
figure that out. You know, the skeletons.
Right. And so, and it just amazes me how many of these corporations and whatever, I mean, they eat themselves to the point there's nothing left but just a few, and yet they are all out there trying to get the resources that are being made available and think that they're going to make all this money. Well, they're going to get eaten up by those with all the money.
But you know why? Because there's a fever pitch on it, and it's a gold fever, just like in Sutter's Mill and, you know, what happened back in the 1800s and stuff. When these guys started finding gold, they would kill, you know, to make a claim or to find gold, because it was their way out. It was their way to finally arise above the, you know, things that they had been enduring all their lives. And at some point, people just did not care and would do anything to anyone to get to that, you know, safe place, to that I'm trying to think of the term that they even use in the Matrix or whatever, the for the holy Zion or whatever, you know, that safe place, to where it's a land of milk and honey, you know, and that these people will do anything, even to their own family members, to get to that place.
It's amazing. We're not really civilized at all. I don't see where we've come anywhere close to
evolving.
What's
scary is
evolving.
The weaponry and the technology and the things that, I mean, we're literally at the fork in the road, that Y, to where we can either free mankind for eternity or enslave him for eternity.
Well, I sure hope people.
And it's really that simple.
I hope people wake up to that. Eric, I'm going to have to thank you for being on the program and taking the time to enlighten our listeners. And I'm hoping maybe we can figure out different ways to become active and slow down kind of the juggernaut that's going on around us.
Well, I could use some help in my own situation because these guys want my head on a silver platter. And I know one of the things, and I apologize for not getting into more of the specifics on my own situation, but I'm compelled to warn and tell people about the bigger issues, the bigger picture, because I just don't think people are grasping what is at our doorstep.
Right, right. And that's one of the reasons why I've started this program, too, because we're getting a lot of misinformation and confusion, and even though we didn't solve the world's problems, people can wake up by numerous different events, and then start putting the pieces together because they're all tied one way or the other.
Oh yeah,
right. So, but again, Eric,
well, I appreciate it. Hopefully, you'll have me back on again soon, and we can go into many more topics or even the individual issues that I'm trying to cope with right now.
Great. And your website is
www.martiallaw911.com. And
you have another one, Lieutenant.
Out there, if they know, really, go ahead.
And there's also a Lieutenant Eric Shine is another name.
Right. If you just Google my name, Eric Shine, and then put in federal officer, military officer, whistleblower, you get all kinds of. I've been on a bunch of different programs, and I've done TV, and you know, a little bit of everything, trying to get out and warn people and explain some of these more complex issues and how they're all interrelated.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, Eric, and yes, we'll have to do this again, and good luck.
And hopefully soon. Take care, Melody, and thank you very much.
Uh-huh. Bye.